Hello, and welcome to Digital Freethought Radio Hour on WOZO Radio 103.9 LP FM right here in Knoxville, Tennessee. Today is December 15th, 2019, and if it's not where you're listening, then you're listening to a rebroadcast of the show and should not try to call in. I'm Doubter 5, and as usual, we have Wombat on the phone. Hello, Wombat.
Hello, it's the Wombat.
Yay. And our special guest is Boudreaux from last week and week before, too. I think he's getting to be a co-host. Say hello to all.
Hey, guys. Glad to be back.
Yeah. Welcome back. Digital Free Thought Radio Hour is a call-in talk radio show about atheism, free thought, rational thought, humanism, and the sciences. And conversely, we'll also talk about religion, religious faiths, gods, holy books, and superstition. And if you get the feeling that you're the only non-believer in Knoxville, well, you're just not. There are several atheist, free-thinking, and rationalist groups that exist right here in Knoxville, and we'll be telling you how you can connect with them right after the mid-show breaks. Also, did you know that there was an atheist call-in television show broadcasting here in Knoxville? Has been for 9 years. Did you know that, Wombat?
Yeah, I think it's really beautiful. I mean, especially the one that they did this year. There was churches, Grimes was there. They had Green Day presenting. It was amazing. And I think the awards are so beautiful. I think video games as an industry really deserve, you know, these game awards to, like, really recognize great people who make video games.
Yeah. Nope. You haven't found it yet.
What? But we'll tell you how to... I was so confident.
Yeah. No clothes, no wheel, as they say. We'll tell you specifically how to find it after the mid-show break. But until then, we'll continue on. In spite of what Steve Martin would have you think, there are an awful lot of atheist songs out there, and you'll be hearing some of them right here on this program and generally on the station as they are in rotation. Wombat, what do you have for us today?
All right, so I got a couple of articles today. Some really interesting things came out from really interesting sources, and we can follow up with some questions that we had. Eric, I know you are, I'm sorry, Boudreaux, you got some good questions coming for you about one of your favorite topics. please give us time to talk. That's all I'm saying. So Wall Street Journal came out with an article last week, and it's called, it's an opinion piece, and it's called "Don't Believe in a God? Lie to Your Children." And yeah. I was just really impressed that Wall Street Journal would host a piece on this. It was written by a lady named Erica Komisar, and her argument is, as a therapist, that she finds religion to be a lot more comforting than lack of religion. And she points to some statistics to show that, you know, as people are not going to church, overall nihilism is increasing over this country, and a good way to combat that is belief in God, specifically her God. And if you don't believe in a God and you have kids, you're better off lying to your children to make them believe and then come up with their own decision when they become adults, rather than to tell them what your beliefs are, or lack of a belief, that is. What do you guys want to, you want to talk about this?
I think this is pretty interesting.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Okay, great. So
now,
I'll go for it.
One of the things I would have to say is that she's not touting the truth of the concept. She's talking about the utilitarianism of the concept. Right. You know, that it's a useful concept, whether it's true or not. And I have a problem with that.
I have a lot of problems with that. It is also still a sideways advocating for something that could be, you know, not only just incorrect, has the potential to just be absolutely not true, but also come with a lot of baggage that could lead to a lot of harm for your kids in the long term, too. I think belief in a God for a child could be really harmful for them to deal with the concept of hell, to deal with the concept of someone always watching what they do, to express themselves sexually in like a healthy manner.
And believing that their friends are going to spend eternity burning forever.
Yeah, that sucks too.
No, if they're not Christian, or their flavor of Christian.
Also, like, the idea of being on good terms with death, like understanding what death is, knowing that it's a part of life. If you hold that off for your entire formative years until your adulthood, and you end up with maybe like a bad disease or a loss in the family, you may have no capacity to deal with that in a healthy way. I do think that there are there's a big contradiction here in that she's trying to do what's best for kids, but she's also trying to advocate indoctrinating kids to what could be demonstrably a really harmful system.
Here, here. I believe.
Boo, don't agree with me.
Yeah, Boudreaux.
Yeah, it's interesting. I actually, we shared this link around right before our summit.
Really?
And talked about it a little bit. Yeah. I actually found an article that kind of criticized it as well. And
wow.
I agree with most everything they're saying. I mean, just the article was actually just lazily written.
Hmm.
It didn't seem like Erica was using any facts that really helped her point. I mean, I think she threw out just a couple of statistics in the beginning, but then everything else was just kind of conjecture. So she really conflated like all of the good things that come out of religion as a community with the belief too. Because I mean,
right.
We've seen over and over. I mean, you can still have community,
yeah,
and doing good for others and seeing other people do good things. You can still have that without the
arguably funner communities,
right.
Too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. Well, Hitchens famously said, you know, show me one good action or good benefit that you can get from religion that you can get from other things other than religion.
Mm.
And nobody's ever been able to take him up on it.
It's true.
Right.
I always think about that. I will literally drive to work, do like some of my assignments, you know, prepare for a seminar, come back home and think like, what couldn't I have done today that was productive and like helpful to people that relied on a God belief? And it seems like, you know, the longer that I'm removed from my religion, the more I'm realizing that I never needed it in the first
right.
place, that I've always right. been like a really productive member of society. And now my paradigm, like the way how I see other people, like when I first became an atheist, I thought everyone around me was a theist. And that was like a very mm-hmm. paranoid feeling.
Yep.
But now
yep.
that I'm out of it, I realize there's a lot more people who are non-committal. There are a lot more atheists than I expected. And the world looks more or less the same as
uh-huh.
a result. And I figure like, it's not as bad. Actually, I think some of the best people in the world do their actions without any sort of, you know, direction from a God or a mm-hmm. God belief. It's not necessary.
They do it from compassion and empathy rather than a hope for a reward and an afterlife.
Mm. Though I would like to address some of the claims that she's making. She is saying, maybe we can spot the fallacy here, but she is saying, hey, look, less people are going to church and more people overall are saying that they are losing optimism. Isn't that a correlation that proves causation?
Well, no, she's making a claim and she's not providing any evidence for it.
Mm.
She's just simply stating it. And the thing about a lot of religious leaders and non-religious leaders, for that matter, to gather their troops together for a cause, they have to give them a problem to work on.
Sure.
They have to bring up a list of items that are bad for society and talk their people into giving them money or giving them effort.
Yeah.
In order to fight those complaints.
And you know what I've said about that? I said anytime there's a money ask or a silly hat involved,
mm-hmm.
we're probably dealing with the religion, which makes me look more like at the whole, like, I'm fine. I can tell when someone's being dogmatic when they're wearing a dumb hat. Like, that typically tends to be the case. And or gives up their money for a cause that is gonna not really... In the short term, do anything good
uh-huh.
in a sense, and so I don't know how I can express this to this lady specifically, Erica, but I would say like, hey, just because we see a trend in nihilism going up, could be a reflection of the people that we're interviewing, could be part of like a standard deviation, just like noise in that signal, could be that we've gotten to the point where we're interviewing more people who've never been had a chance to be interviewed. This year, I'm basically saying there are a lot of other
right.
reasons that we could see nihilism going up, and it may not necessarily be directed to leaving church. In fact, leaving church as a whole might actually be an improvement on people's mindset of getting out of like a really close-minded dogmatic situation. Maybe they left the church because they wanted to be friends with people who their church didn't agree with, and now they
right.
have a much more fulfilling
yeah.
life.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of aspects here. Boudreaux, you have kids. How do you feel
yes.
about the idea of, you know, explicitly lying to them to keep them safe? And have you ever done that? Like, I have not raised kids. I raised a cat.
Well,
the cat's probably lying to you.
Yeah, a lot to that. Yeah. But no, I mean, I sorry, Boudreaux, if I'm stepping on your line here, but I would think that most parents do lie to their children, at least when they tell them about the Tooth Fairy, Santa Claus, things like that.
Sure.
And is that beneficial?
Yeah, let's have that talk.
I struggle actually with the whole Santa thing early on. Obviously, I didn't want to kill Christmas for the kids, and I also didn't want to ruin Christmas for their friends by, you know, being that those parents that tell their kids there's no Santa too early, and then they spoil it for other kids. I don't want to take any of the magic away. I think the difference with Tooth Fairy and Santa and that kind of thing is you lie to them at a young age, but kind of with a wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
Hmm.
You know, it's kind of a playful lie. Again, I kind of struggled with it, but I think there's too many moving parts to it to make it that cut and dry. I guess I'm not willing to go all the way and, you know, kind of ruin it for them that way. My kids found out pretty early on that there was no Santa. They're 8 and 11 now. They haven't believed in a while.
What? And, wait.
Right.
Where he's like, no, what? There's no Santa.
What?
yeah. But you know, we still celebrate. I mean, we're atheists, but we still celebrate Christmas.
Of course.
And you know, I mean, it's a wonderful holiday. So.
Yeah.
I've always, when I was growing up, we had the idea of Santa, but it was more of like, he's a white guy that goes into other people's houses and doesn't get arrested. And I'm like, that ain't real. Yeah, that or this system screwed up. So when I was a kid, I knew about Saint Nick, like the character Santa Claus was based off of. And this is, by the way, when I was like really religious as a kid. But like, I knew Saint Nick was like a Russian quasi homeless guy who gave oranges to people and like would like put them in like their stockings and stuff like that. And it just, the story escalated into like, guy who lives in the North Pole, has a red coat, has reindeer and all that stuff. And I was just like, I don't take that seriously, but I know it's probably like based off something that, you know, and a much lower degree of magnitude of fantastical stuff probably happened. Sort of like how, when I was more convinced that like Johnny Appleseed actually existed, because that's like a pretty mundane story. Just a guy who plants apple seeds all day long. But I was like, oh, wait
what?
Yeah, because like Appleseed.
No, I thought he did.
No. So like apple trees are super hard to grow, super yeah. hard to grow, and they take forever before they even start like, you know, fruiting, if that's the mm-hmm. right term. So like when I realized, oh wow, that's not even real, then probably John Henry's not real, Paul Bunyan's not real, yeah. Santa Claus isn't real.
Yeah.
Like it cascaded all the way down, so that I didn't really have to put a lot of thought into it. And so I can imagine someone feeling like, oh, my parents not so much saying like my parents lied to me about Santa, but more like, oh, it's the American experience to realize this for yourself and like basically grow out of it. But I always wonder like, where does that line draw? And like when someone realizes, oh, all these things aren't real, but what about my God belief? You know, like
mm-hmm.
what's still holding that up? And that's the interesting thing, because that's where I feel like the cognitive dissonance starts to begin. Because you now have a person who believes, well, it's not true just because everyone believed it, because it doesn't make sense and there's no evidence to really support it. But my God belief is totally true, even though everybody believes it and there's no evidence to support it. And I only worry, I don't know, like if I have kids, I wouldn't know. I'd probably just tell them like the history as much as true as possible, and then just enjoy the myth as a myth as best as I can, without ever explicitly telling them like, hey, this is not real, or this is real. I don't know. What do you think, Boudreaux?
No, and it's interesting, because I've gone down a lot of these thoughts, especially with kids, and trying to decide even how to handle religion. I mean, we did deal with this, you know, when Viv was pretty young. So I mean, it's eight or so years ago.
Whoa, is this something you talked about with your wife beforehand, or is it like a conversation yes. you just roll with?
No, we actually talked about it quite a bit.
Wow.
I was starting to kind of go and enter into this new atheist rabbit hole with you know the Four Horsemen and YouTube and all that.
Mm.
And I was listening to a lot of that and talking about a lot of that. And, you know, my wife wasn't on the same page, as me. And we talked earlier about, you know, maybe we should take the kids to church just so they can kind of get, you know, exposure to that. And I remember just really struggling with it and thinking, well, I mean, if we do that, we're going to take them to all churches or, I mean, you know, I mean, I feel like whatever one we take them to is just instant indoctrination. Or at least you start planting seeds luckily, we're both on exactly the same page now. It's even to the point where when we drive by the nativity scene, the almost like cardboard cutout nativity scene.
Yeah.
People put in their front yards the one that looks like two dinosaurs battling over a table saw.
Yeah. Yeah.
Have you seen
what? Wait. Yeah. Two dinosaurs battling over a table saw? What is this?
Yeah. You ought to just Google search that. Let me find the image and send it to you. But it really is. It's a nice nativity scene.
It's a silhouette.
Yeah, silhouette.
Of the manger scene, but it can be interpreted two different ways.
Yeah. If you kind of look at it from a different perspective. And we drive by it, and the kids in the car, everyone in the car erupts in a roar every time we drive by.
Oh, wow.
You can't unsee it. Once you see it, you just can't unsee it.
Okay, that's a stretch. Hey, I will tell you this. I did see a nativity, so all the nativity scenes are up. There's not a lot of them in my neighborhood, though I do live in a small town, but I did see one. And I was driving past it, and I was thinking to myself, it's like, that is like the most whitest dude with a brown cropped beard, and like the most whitest lady, and the most whitest three, you know, other, you know, wise men around him. And I'm like, this is Africa.
Wow.
You ask him, it's like, didn't this take place in Africa? It's like, where do you find four people to look like that? It's just the most amazing thing. Though, if you go to, I went to Busan and Fukuoka when I was like 12 and 13 visiting my family or my sister who was in the Navy at the time. And they have nativity scenes and like pictures of like Jesus Christ on the cross, and he looks very distinctly Asian. And if you look at like what our classical Roman approach is for the depiction of Jesus, it's very Italian, you know, like curly blondish golden hair.
Really?
Gaunt nose. And I'm like, whoa! So like, and then of course black churches have the black Jesus too. But like, it's just, it's so bizarre how wrapped up in our own thinking we've gotten to the point where we've iconized these people to basically represent what we look like without ever really
You asked the question, where do they find four white people to, you know, to be in the manger scene?
Hollywood
is very fine.
It's true, but it's just such a stretch. Though I would say, like, if I was a kid, I would be asking those questions. So like, as a black kid, I was asking those questions, and I would ask them to myself, and I'd be like, oh, that's weird, like, isn't this Jerusalem? Where are you gonna have these people at? And I think even though I was still, you know, indoctrinated in the belief, I never really had the opportunity to critically work my way out of it until college. So it's just amazing what you can accept to be true. And that's why I think it's probably not a good idea to lie to your kids if you don't believe. Like, if you don't believe, you can have that honest conversation with them. I think Boudreaux's approach is excellent, actually. And I would say, you know, lacking that.
Well, one of the things I feel about it is that, you know, you only have so much trust.
Yeah.
And you're destroying that trust.
Yep.
I mean, it'll come and go, of course, you know, during the relationship. But if you lie to someone, you're giving up part of that trust, especially if we find out later that it was a lie.
Right.
So
how do you make that up?
Now you have a problem.
How do you get back 18 years? It's like, hey, you know, you circumcised me. I got a lot of questions now. I think it's just a really interesting article. Though I would say this, here's the silver lining. It's an article written by a lady who's obviously a Christian, who's admitting the fact that less people are going to church. That's coming out of the mouth of a person who's, you know, desperate enough to say lie to your kids to maintain numbers in the church, right? Which is a good thing, because less people going to church means more people are wising up, and that's great. That's a great promise for our future. But also, it's an article where, you know, a religious person in a very high profile magazine is saying, hey, lie to your children.
Right.
Do
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
And I think it does more on the unintentional good side than it could ever do in the harm side. Because an atheist is not going to read that and be like, hey, you know what? I should be lying to my kids. This lady has a point. No one's going to say that.
Well, one of the things that, you know, it's just says it's a magical time of year, you know, you'll take the magic away. Hmm. Well, there isn't any real magic in the world. I mean, magic doesn't exist. So, I mean, why would you lie to them and say it is? There is magic in the world.
We have no good reason to believe that until we actually have a demonstration that it does.
Right.
Right. And we don't. So don't believe it until you do. Hey, that was pretty cool. Any closing thoughts on this article? Because we can move on. Thank you, Eric.
I can add one more closing thing to it that's kind of humorous.
Go for it.
Someone criticized the article and wrote another article about it. Meta, if I'm saying that right.
Oh, I know that guy. He's on YouTube, right?
Oh, he may be. Okay.
Yeah, we met Kentucky Freethought Convention. Yeah, go for it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, he wrote a really interesting and short kind of criticism of it that had a lot of the good points that we brought up. But he ended it with this, and I'm quoting him, "The only positive thing about this essay is that it gives readers hope that they, too, can get published one day. I mean, it clearly doesn't take too much to get an op-ed published in the Wall Street Journal.
That's
you don't have to be an expert.
That's
anyone
fantastic.
Can do
mm-hmm. I can't top yeah. that. Yeah. I can't top that. Yeah. So that is put into the bin. Good job, Boudreaux. Mm-hmm. All right, so the other article that we'll go through to will probably take us through our break is called Flipping the Script on Atheists' Street Epistemology. So street epistemology, great way to talk to people and figure out how they arrive at conclusions without having an argument or debate. It's mm-hmm. kind of like, it's not new. It's not new. In fact, it's been around since, you know, days of Socrates before that. The first person to be like, hey, how do you know how to make fire? Like that, that's probably like the first street epistemology question mm-hmm. ever. But like asking people how they figured it out and asking if that means of figuring it out is reliable is the whole point of street epistemology. It could be done with anything. It could be done with anyone. And it's a really great way to talk to people. Christians don't like it. Because it makes them think critically. I finished the sentence. It makes them think critically. And as a result, they don't want to have people challenge their claims or make them reduce their tithing amounts and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So a guy wrote a Christian apologist, a self-proclaimed Christian apologist named... Oh, man, I don't even know what this guy's name is. Let's find it. His name's not on this thing. Okay, well, we'll find it as we go down. But the website is called Christian Apologist. So he goes by the Christian Apologist.
Yeah, it kind of says something about it if he doesn't sign his work.
It's true. It's true. He goes by the Christian Apologist, and he wrote an article called Flipping the Script on Atheist Street Epistemology, basically saying, hey, you know, there's this new thing that new atheists are doing where they challenge unsuspecting interlocutors, whatever that word means.
It's questioners, people who ask questions.
And challenge them to basically give up their beliefs or have doubt in faith as a way to come to conclusions.
Yeah.
And so he wrote up a 10-step program or a 7-step program to basically flip the script on anyone trying to do SE on you.
I've already got a problem with it.
Oh. Step zero, Larry.
Oh, just from the flipping the script on the atheist street epistemology.
Go for it.
Atheists, when they're doing street epistemology, we don't go by a script.
Yeah, that's true. The
Christian apologists go by a script.
Yes.
And so he's addressing, you know, he's calling it something that they do that we don't right off the top of it. So it's...
Yeah, it's very true. You know,
the problem.
Yes.
And go ahead and finish. I just wanted to throw that out
before we go much farther
on it.
You've actually done some chats with me. You've been on my YouTube channel before. And do you have an idea of, like, where this guy might be going?
I haven't done my homework here and read this article in particular. I know you sent it out, and I remember I started it and must have gotten distracted. So I'm gonna track you guys through this.
Nice.
You guys are the SE experts, but so I'm kind of curious. I agree, though. He's starting off. It looked like he was what's the opposite of straw manning? Steel manning.
Steel manning.
It looked like he was steel manning the argument by really making a very, very clear description of how SE works and all that. But I think Larry's right. You guys don't want to follow a script, so
yeah, not really.
I think you're getting straw manned here a little bit. So so yeah, here let me listen, Nathan.
Okay,
right now
we've suddenly built up all the suspense in the world, and guess what? Time for a quick little break. We'll definitely get into flipping the script on the Street Epistemologist after we return. This is 103.9 FM Low Power coming out of Knoxville. You're listening to the Digital Free Thought Radio Hour. We'll be back right after this.
You're listening to the Digital Free Thought Radio Hour on WOZO 103.9 LPFM in Knoxville, Tennessee. Feel free to join in on the conversation at 865-333-5937. That's 865-333-5937. And now, back to the show. Digital Free Thought Radio.
Welcome back to the second half of the Digital Free Thought Radio Hour on WOZO Radio, 103.9 LPFM, right here in Knoxville, Tennessee. Today's December 15th. I'm Dr. Five, and as usual, we have our on the phone with us is Wombat.
Hey,
say
Wombat.
Hello, Wombat. And our guest, Boudreaux. Say hello, Boudreaux.
Hey.
Digital Free Thought Radio Hour is a call-in talk radio show about atheism, free thought, rational thought, and humanism. Let's talk about the free thought groups that you can join right here in Knoxville. First, there's the Atheist Society of Knoxville, founded in 2002. We're in our 17th year. ASK now has 2,000 members, but it's got almost 1,000 members, 980-something members.
How close?
We skipped right from 1,000 to 2,000 in 1 week. You can find us online at KnoxvilleAtheist.org, or you can go to Meetup or Google or whatever and just type in Knoxville Atheist, and you'll bring us up. Also, you can join the ASK in person at our weekly Meetup, which happens every Tuesday evening at Barley's Tap Room and Pizzeria in Knoxville's Old City, where we get together for food, drink, and conversation. Everyone is welcome, that is, as long as you don't come to preach, proselytize, provoke, or punch. Thank you, Atheist Experience. By the way, if you don't live in Knoxville, you can still go to meetup.com and search for an atheist group in your town. If you don't find one,
start one.
That's right. Another large free-thinking group here in Knoxville are the Rationalists of East Tennessee. They've been around for more than 20 years. RET has biweekly presentations and discussions at the Pellissippi State Campus near Hardin Valley Road. They meet the first and third Sundays at the Goins Administration Building. And if that's too much to remember, just go to rationalist.org and click on the upcoming events. Let's see. Earlier in the show, we said we'd talk about the Knoxville Atheist call-in TV show.
We have a call-in TV show?
We do.
You never tell me these things. I would watch it.
Yeah. It's been broadcasting for 9 years. You think you would have found it just by flipping around.
I remember when you used to say it was like 6 years when we first started.
Yeah.
That's a while back ago. Wow.
Going on 10 now, but it'll be August before it's 10.
We're old men, Larry.
Yeah. Anyway. Free Thought Forum, and you can see it every Wednesday between 6:30 and 7:30 p.m. on Comcast Channel 12 or Charter Channel 192. Or you can watch it streaming online at ctvknox.org. You can also find archives of some of their shows on YouTube where a fan has been posting them. Just go to YouTube and search for three words, Free Thought Forum Knoxville. And if you're interested in getting involved with the TV show or the radio show, just come to any Ask Meetup or RET meeting and talk to us about it. You could be our next co-host or guest. And getting back to the show, where'd we leave it off?
We're going
to
flip the script on some atheists.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Okay.
Hey, listen. Yeah, we don't use scripts, but go ahead.
So basically, honest
questioning is what we do.
So yeah, that's actually pretty interesting because the Christian apologist basically is tackling this from the point of view of basically saying, hey, instead of having SE or an atheist SE or do SE on you, do SE on them. And he's listed out the steps as he's seen them in eight consecutive steps. The first step, actually, I don't have a problem for a majority of these steps, to be honest with you. I think step one, he says, build rapport with your interlocutor. Interlocutor is a fancy way of saying interview partner. But same number of syllables, but just way more nerdier. But basically, build rapport with your interlocutor or your interview partner. I agree. That's really important. Don't don't just rush into questions. Try to like understand where they're coming from. And then step two is identify the claim. I think that's reasonable too. If someone wanted to model their atheist-based SE off of this, you know, script, so far no problem. And then after step two, where you identify the claim, three, confirm the claim, which is more of just like a, hey, I'm just going to make sure that we know what we're going to be talking about in this conversation.
And that you heard it correctly.
And that you heard it correctly. That the person that you're talking to hears it from another person's mouth other than their own. Because sometimes that's what you need for it to stick. I can't tell you how many times I've been in a conversation where someone says, science proves my God. And I'll be like, so you're saying science proves your God? And they'll be like, no, that's not what I said. I meant there's a lot of scientists that believe in my God, which is a very, very,
very, very different claim.
Very different claim. So yeah, confirm that claim. Clarify definitions is step four. This is fantastic, actually. And I got to be honest with you, even at the start where he's like talking about definitions and like explaining what an atheist is, he's like, an atheist is someone who doesn't believe in a God, and an agnostic is someone who doesn't know that there's a God. So like, this guy's on point. Like, I don't have an issue here. Right. Step five is identify a confidence level, which is basically like, hey, ask them how confident they are in the position. I don't think you need to have a number scale. I've been asking people like, hey, are you absolutely sure that you're right? Like, you know, you can't be wrong. And if they say yes, that's good enough for me. Cause my target really is more of like, I'm closed-minded rather than a number. Like if they're 76%, I don't want to make them move that up or down. I just want to be like, are you at least willing to change your mind if you have better information? Like that tends to be my crux. But, the very last two steps is where it starts to get a little wonky. Actually, last three steps. We're on step six. Step six is identify the method that they use to come to the confidence level. So, like, what made you so confident? Step seven, ask questions that reveal the reliability of the method. We are perfectly in SE right now. And then step eight is where everything falls off the course. Step eight is offer your interview partner a lifeline. Basically, sell your God. Sell your God belief. So, like, once you get them to the point where they say they don't know, like, literally step seven says, like, keep asking questions that reveal the reliability of the method until your interview partner says they don't know. And then step eight is offer your interlocutor a lifeline, which is the
evangelize.
It's the dirtiest thing. It's basically, like, shake them apart until they admit that they don't know something, and then sell your, you know, biased beliefs on the world. And I can tell you something, if I was a Christian looking at an atheist do street epistemology, it looks like I'm selling a point of view. It looks like I'm saying, hey, your God belief isn't true and you need to become an atheist like me. But really, from my point of view and from like others who've seen this at work, is my point of view isn't I'm right. It's more of like I'm trying to figure out how you're right. And if we can't get there together, maybe I don't know is a good place to be.
Or your method is correct or worthy.
Yeah. Until we have like a worthy method, and then I'll believe you. But until then, let's work on that. And until we have that, maybe we shouldn't be as confident. And that's the whole point of it. I've had a conversation with someone at Politicon who was taking a lot of time to think about his responses. And at the end, I was like, he didn't know why he believed in a God. So I was like, he didn't know what was justifying his confidence. And I asked him, like, would you want to have like a reliable way to come to that conclusion? And he's like, sure. What are you offering? And I said, nothing. I'm just genuinely asking. He was like, oh, whoa. I don't know. And I'm like, I could see in my head, like, wow, this could be, if taken to the dark side, a really useful way for people to misuse this strategy and try to sell their belief systems too. But the thing is, by the time you get through step seven, you've already integrated an appreciation for critical thought in your interview partner, where they realize what is a standard of evidence and what are good basis for that. So everything that's said in step eight would fall apart in step seven, where he's basically listing out like origins, science proves that there's a God, meaning and purpose, God makes me feel comfortable, morality, God makes me not want to kill people. And I'm like, oh, geez, wow, these are really bad reasons to claim that you know something exists. There's my rant. What do you guys think?
Well, obviously, you know, I agree with you that I think that if you leave out that last step where you're selling your point of view,
yes,
and you just concentrate on the methods that you use, that your chance of getting to a good method, either their method or your method or whatever, is open to intellectual scrutiny. And you can only improve your method by conversation, I would think, or at least if you just disprove a bad method, that's better than not making any progress at all.
Right.
But when you start throwing in claims at the end, like an evangelical would, then you're throwing the method out totally.
Yeah, you stop doing SE, and now you're just doing something completely different.
Right. So, right, and he's just trying to smuggle it in using street epistemology.
Right, which you can't do. We had people try to document their efforts to do SE to make people vegan. And I was telling the guy, like, SE's not a sales pitch. Like, it's not going to work in a way to make someone convinced of something. It only helps them use faculty of tools to help them realize if they came to a decision in a good way or not. Right. And if you try to say, hey, here's street epistemology. Why do you eat meat? Why do you eat meat? Why do you eat meat? You don't know? Great. You shouldn't eat meat anymore. Here's some great food that you can have. Would you like some lima beans? Like, no one's... You've lost, in the similar sense, to, like, with that parent article, you've lost your trust with your interview partner. Because now they realize, oh, all these questions that you've been asking me is really just a front end, a sales pitch that you could hopefully, you know, pull the wool over my eyes. And that's not cool. Thankfully, it's not SE. Like, once you start selling, you're not doing SE anymore. Yeah.
But no, it's not an end. I mean, the evangelical claims is not an end, but it is a new topic to talk about. You know, if they're talking to atheists, like they say in the article, and they're asking them all of these questions, and then they start throwing in their lifeline, as they say, well, then you've got a new topic. You can just start off on that. We don't shy away from investigation, no matter what the topic. And he's saying, you know, switch the tables, you know, flip the script, you know, to get the better of atheists. We're not trying to get the better of people. We're trying to examine methods and maybe help them or help us at the end of the conversation.
I agree. Hey, Bujo, you want to weigh in?
Yeah, I think my big comment on just the way this thing is written is it starts off very clear, you know, identifying the steps, takes that leap in step 8. But then where he goes next, he or she, I don't even know who wrote this, it just seems to take a weird turn where now we're trying to show, we're trying to make the argument for origins, meaning, purpose, morality. And it just all seems like nonsense. I mean, now we have 4 steps. And I don't know what happened to the 8, and they have references, but boy, they're talking an awful lot about cosmology and origins of the universe, but they really don't have any references that I would think you would want to have there.
And not only that, but he's advocating a very specific God belief. So people go to cosmology to prove a general, hopefully, God. Hopefully, hope.
And plus, but he's...
Therefore, Jesus.
right. He's making an incredible, unmentioned leap in logic that they never examined.
Right.
Yeah. Everything that begins to exist, the cause. I don't know where the evidence is for that claim.
So I've heard this. I'll take a devil's advocate approach here. A lot of atheists say they don't know what it would take for them to believe in the Christian God, but because the Christian God should be so powerful to basically give them that information. And so if you have a Christian that says, well, I don't know what it would take to convince me, do they really have a ground or a basis to claim that they don't believe in a God for a reasonable reason if they don't know what it would take for them to change their own mind? Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah. You know what Matt Dillahunty of Atheist Experience says on that question?
Yeah,
don't
go
you?
For it.
Well, he says that if there is an omniscient God who wants me to know that he exists, he knows exactly what it would take to convince me.
Right.
Why has he not contacted me with that information? Why is, I mean, if he wants me to know, and he's all powerful and omniscient, then he should have no trouble at all contacting me and convincing me.
Great.
Using whatever criteria he thinks would, he knows that's in my mind that it would convince me.
And if the Christian apologist,
why has he not done that?
Yeah, if the Christian apologist hears that, he'll be like, "Don't you think that's lazy? You're basically saying you don't know what it would take to change your mind, and you're hoping God will do it for you. But what would it take for you to be more willing to believe?"
I think
God?
It's intellectually honest.
I think so too. That's the right answer. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can't.
Yeah.
He's basically. I don't care if you interpret my intellectual honesty as laziness. I don't know is the best answer. Until I know something. And why shouldn't I say I don't know if I don't know something? You're not going to try to shift this burden of proof on me. If you have a God that's supernatural and untestable, I don't know what it would take for me to believe him because I don't know how to do a test like that. But that's not my problem. That's the problem of people who say that God exists, to figure that out and then come to me with evidence. Because until then, I can't turn it like a light switch in my head that I believe it. I have to be convinced that it's true.
Well, there's another tack on this. It says, why isn't personal revelation good enough for all of us? If it's good enough for Saul and good enough for Moses, why do you single out those guys and then make all the rest of us just go along in secondhand information?
Yeah, that's kind of weird, right?
Second it's or like third or fourth hand.
Yeah.
You know, and 2,000 years removed. You know?
I've always felt that you have to have more and more faith the farther away we get from that.
Yeah.
Revelation, and that just seems unfair. So it's like my children would require more faith than, you know, my grandparents, and that just seems weird. And it's only going to get worse.
Well, the thing about it is, we don't know who wrote any of the programs, any of the stories in the Bible. No idea. I mean, the scholars will tell you that we call them Author J and Author P because we don't have any idea who wrote them. Even the Gospels, particularly the Gospels, we know that they were written hundreds of years, well, 70 to 100 years after the death of Christ. So, you know, theoretically, the apostles were pretty much gone by then, too. So how are we supposed to credit miracle claims by people we don't even know when we wouldn't credit miracle claims from people we do know? It just makes no sense.
Also, if you're going to have a revelation, why not do it in the age of cell phones and the internet, and you could get the whole planet on the same page.
Sure.
Today,
how would you do that? Oh. Your God, well, how would you actually manifest that?
He wouldn't have to need the technology. He could be everywhere at once, visible to all of us, speaking different languages at the same time. He could make the Bible update itself every day to the language of the person who's reading
it. Like a magical book.
And give them the information they need to make themselves spiritually grow.
Sure.
I mean, it could be a living document,
sure.
Truly living. If he's all omniscient and all powerful.
Boudreaux, is that how you would do it?
No, you know, so you'd have to, if we're going to play with the same rules as most religions, we have to have there has to be a faith component to it, right? You know, it's a test.
It has to be obfuscated.
Well, that's what they say.
It has to be obfuscated. Yeah.
It's got to be a little bit.
We got to make them sweat somehow. This needs to be a profitable profitable business.
Right.
Okay.
So it has to happen at night.
Uh-huh.
It's a foggy day, foggy night,
or the sun dancing around in the sky.
Okay.
Right. Right.
That only some of the people see.
But I've often thought that it's why did these lucky, I'll say in air quotes, you know, lucky few people get to witness it. I mean, Doubter Tom, you know, he was the atheist back in the day, I guess. You know, he was the one that said, "I don't believe you actually got nailed to the cross and got to put his finger through the hole," right?
No, he didn't.
Wasn't he the skeptic? He didn't actually do it?
Well, he did question Jesus, and he did ask him about his holes, and Jesus told him to touch it, you know, make sure, but he never did do it.
He never did.
Nope.
My Christian friends say he did.
Yeah, well, so. He's wrong. According to the scriptures.
I have an idea of how I think this would work well, or not necessarily work well, but at least be awesome. There's a video game series called Divinity. It's like a RPG, Lord of the Rings sort of a thing. There's dwarves, there's elves, all that stuff. But there's a concept of this temple that exists only once a year, and people go there to fight, and the winner of the tournament becomes a god for their race. And so when you go to this, you know, temple, there's a bunch of empty thrones because every year the gods recycle. Like the winners of the past tournament have to step down and fight.
Where is this?
It's a video game called Divinity. It's just cool. So like there's a dwarf god, there's an elf god, there's a human god. There could be a mouse god if they show up to the temple and there's like two mice fighting. The winner of that competition will be the god of all the mice. And like, you know who the previous gods are because it's pretty obvious who the tournament winners are. Because they're the ones that are the only ones living and they have powers to help their particular race and they have to work with each other to like spread out divinity to help everyone else. So it's like a very tactile, very much involved process for godhood. Like it's not something that's obscure. You don't have to read a book and interpret it. There's a guy you can call on a bench somewhere where you have a direct line with who's like your representative, like your congressman, and you can like explain your problems and they'll be like, okay, well, you know, we can, that's definitely a major concern. That's definitely something we'll take into consideration next time we go into caucus and we'll bring that up for sure. Thank you. And I like that. I like that more as a system, though. If I'm going to be perfectly honest with you, and we have time to talk about this, I think the one of the other coolest god systems was an old show in the 90s called Chicago Express. Oh man, no! Ah, dang it! It was Greg Hobson. He got a newspaper that was one day early. The premises.
Oh, gets,
do you know the name of that show?
No. Interesting.
It's a guy. Yeah. It's a guy whose life is like basically turned upside down. His wife left him. He's kind of a schlub, but he's a good person. He has like a Columbo vibe about him. He's just like a nice guy. He just has a lot of bad luck in life. So he's living out of a hotel, and a guy knocks on his door, and he gives him a newspaper or leaves a newspaper that's basically tomorrow's newspaper. And in the newspaper, it says like this building exploded or like these kids drowned. And he's like, oh man, I don't want that to happen. This is tomorrow's newspaper. Let me see if I can go and stop it. And he goes, tries to talk to the kids, but the kids have some problem with their parents. So he goes out of his way to resolve the problem with the parents so the kid doesn't go to the river, so he doesn't drown. And the newspaper changes in real time. And he's like, man, cool, I stopped the drowning. And so every day he gets tomorrow's newspaper, and it starts being like this back and forth thing where it's like, who's the newsman who's giving me these magical favors? And the newspaper guy is basically God. He is giving newspapers to one person in every city to basically do kind actions to make the world a better place. And he's delegating his work to people to take care of themselves. And I'm like, I like that in a really, really profound way. It's like, I'm choosing you to be a good person because you're a good person, not because you follow the commandments, but because you're inherently a good guy. And I'm leaving it up to you to figure out how to like best help your community because I can't be everywhere at once. And it's like, you can't argue that he's not real. And some people have different systems of like how to help people, but I just thought it was really cool how, you know, everyone has like this very involved relationship with a god for a better cause. And we don't have that now. And that's why I'm saying, like, that's why it seems kind of like such a crock a little bit.
Yeah. But there's so many people out there that say that God works through people, and therefore they don't need to supply any evidence that he's real.
Yeah. Yeah, you get that. Though,
and
I
then
love
the,
to say,
the people I, working at cross minute. Purposes.
Yeah. I'd love to have a 5-minute conversation with those people.
Yeah.
Okay. So those are those two articles. Hey, I have a lot of questions on a little website called YouTube. I got a street epistemology channel called Let's Chat. Feel free to check it out. Just search Let's Chat on YouTube. You'll find I post videos on a fairly regular basis, at least like once a week. And you can even find episodes of this show there too. Eric, we got a guy reaching out to you. He wants you to... Okay. Yeah, it's on your free will video. We had met like back in September of last year to have a conversation about free will at on University of Kentucky, and it was really cool. It's like my first time there. You helped set that up, and I really appreciate that. I had some of my best talks there, to be honest with you. And it's been probably my second most popular video of like all time, and it's kind of crazy. So there was a guy named Adrian. He wanted to know like. He saw your video. He also knows about the podcast. He wants to know how you define agency and if you're really absolutely sure that there's no free will. The question that he's asking is, can you explain what you mean by agency? Do you still think there is agency? And are you absolutely sure there's no free will? I think the self is just as much an illusion as free will.
Okay. And this is where I was hoping I could get Chad to listen in on this one. He and I have talked about this at great length.
And sounds like this guy kind of agrees with you. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Well, I think agency, I remember saying that, and I remember thinking we probably should have defined that a little bit different.
Sure.
I think, well, the easier thing to tackle is, what was he, how confident am I that there's no free will?
How confident are you that there's no free will? Are you absolutely sure that there's no free will? I think we had that in the video. I think you said you're open to it, but it just depends on how it's defined. And the way you're defining it, you don't see that it's feasible.
I don't see any biological evidence for it. I don't see any neurological evidence for it. Of course, a lot of this comes from listening to experts on the topic, which I agree with, and they're definitely more suited to understand these things than I am. But just I've thought about the free will thing for a long time. It feels like the only way you could have free will is by introducing magic. You need some,
based on how you define it. Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
And it's the ability to do something otherwise. If you could go back in time 30 seconds, could if I pick different words to say?
Right.
No, I think I would.
Or literally truly do something completely random with no cause to it whatsoever.
Right. And, yeah.
And if you define it that way, it's magic. Yeah.
Yeah, and a good computer analogy, if there are any computer programmers listening in.
Oh, Larry.
I'm one.
Yeah, okay, so write a program to generate a random number.
Yeah.
I'll wait.
Yeah.
Just let me know when that's done. Yeah.
No, I've done that many, many times, and it all depends on the time of the clock at the time that you're in the program.
Yeah.
So there's no real free will in the computer. The free will is in the click when you tell it to go forward.
Right.
But then is that really free will, or is right. just your time to do that?
And I think that's where it gets to. Laplace's demon is a concept that basically if you knew the trajectory and, you know, the velocity and angle of every molecule in the universe, you could predict everything.
Right. How
does this apply? Or how would you apply this to agency?
Okay, so agency, and I think I said that in maybe a way that doesn't help, didn't really help the argument.
Like
so,
in a world where there's no free will, is there agency? I think that's the gist of the question.
Yeah, and here's where I'd maybe backtrack on that and say a better way to put it is we feel like we have free will, and because of that, we have the sense of agency. We're able to, we feel like we're the authors of our thoughts. We feel like we can choose between red and blue. We feel that way. But I think that is an illusion. And again, if you look at the science and the biology, there's really no room for free will, especially if you start thinking about the self and where's the me floating around in your head? Biologically, neurologically, it's hard to pinpoint. I mean, there's no place to put it. You're really just kind of sitting back watching all this. But since we feel like we have agency, that's kind of what makes us human.
We have the illusion of free will is the way I like to put it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's the reason you're not, you know, like the people that don't believe in free will, or deny that it exists. I mean, they're not out, you know, raping and pillaging and, you know, they're not monsters because we still have this illusion of free will, and that makes us human, and that's how we should operate. And I think a good way to point that out is go ahead and try living your life as if you don't have free will. Just see what that's like.
Try living your life as if you don't have free will. Can you explain that? I'm trying to wrap my head around that.
Well, your free will. Stop breathing. Just quit.
Haven't people done that?
Well,
isn't like that going on all the time?
Okay, if you jump in a water with weighted boots,
yeah, or like
you're gonna stop
or just
breathing,
old,
but,
or like hold your breath too long and you die, or like I mean, there's some weird
I'd like to
Guinness
see someone
records.
Yeah. Okay, I'd like to see someone. Okay. stop your heart from beating, or I mean,
slow it
you
down,
know,
yeah.
If Yeah,
well, you're talking about autonomic systems there. Let's talk about something that's voluntary.
Yeah.
Okay. Think about nothing.
Yeah, that's...
Don't think about... If you have free
that's
will,
a good one.
Yeah,
don't think about dinosaurs right now.
Uh-huh. Yeah,
if you have free
hard.
Will, just don't do it.
Okay.
Yeah. It's like, yeah.
That's a weird test. Can I throw something out?
Yeah.
And I know
please.
we've beat this dead horse, but... I consider free will to be the difference between being dragged out of a restaurant and walking out of the restaurant on my own volition, right? Like, that's
right.
How I define it. I understand what you mean when you say free will, and I would agree with you that that doesn't exist. Like, that seems like magic. Like,
yeah.
Just doing truly random actions, that doesn't seem feasible. Like, we have, everything we do is dependent. We are literally on a rock where we've been mixing around for the last billions of years. Everything is a part of each other. We're all part of a system here.
Yes.
And so that applies to our actions as well.
Yeah.
But as far as agency to say, hey, I want to go to Burger King right now, or I could go to McDonald's. I'm going to go to Burger King. And you go to Burger King. I was like, I chose Burger King on my free will. That's how I'm defining it. It may not.
Okay. That's where we should linger a little bit, because
okay.
I don't think choosing between Burger King and McDonald's is something that you actually decided.
Yeah, I agree that it's not random, but I'm also using an alternative definition of free will where it's like I'm choosing based on my own will that I'm picking freely versus having someone drag me to Burger King. I'm going to Burger
right.
King on my own free will. That's what I'm
right. So
it's just
this kind of gets into Daniel Dennett's version of free will versus Sam Harris's, which I think what you're talking about is the illusion. What you're saying is you feel like you made the choice between these two and someone didn't pull you there.
Yeah.
I would say
someone pulling me there is a violation of my free will. That's how I'm defining
yeah,
free
yeah,
will. Yeah.
Yeah.
And my
and
agency
I
is
think,
an expression
yeah.
of my free will.
Right. And I think what I'm saying is that those probably feel like that.
Yeah.
I think it's just an illusion.
Yeah. If your model is free will is random. Yeah. I agree with that. Yeah.
I think mm-hmm. it's necessary for society, though, because without the illusion of free will, then nobody's responsible for their actions.
Yeah,
and,
that
you
too,
know,
yeah.
So yeah. we have to decide to put people away if they do actions that are harmful to society, murder, rape, kidnapping,
yeah.
things like that. We have to assume that they are capable of making that decision or doing it, whether or not it's free will on their part.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to make the decision, put them away, and keep society safe.
But that, I mean, I think that doesn't mean that, I don't think that incarceration is, in opposition of, like, locking someone up for doing something horrible isn't a bad thing, even knowing that they didn't choose to do it.
What?
I think, you know,
you
yeah,
just
so,
opened
so,
up
we're,
Pandora's
we're,
box and we got 1 minute
no,
left
no,
in the show.
Hurry. And hurry.
If someone does something horrible, whether or not they chose to do it or they have this magical free will,
uh-huh.
we still lock them away
right.
for many reasons. One,
limit
to keep them safe.
Yeah.
Right. But two, other people see that behavior. And now they can learn from that and say, oh, I probably shouldn't do that bad thing. Even though we're claiming no one's choosing, we're still making a difference in the world.
Would you say that's using a person as a means to an end?
I suppose.
Is that a moral thing
I'm walking
thing
into
to do?
Something here.
Yeah. I wonder, is it moral to use people as means to an end?
I don't know. In this case,
man.
I feel like it is. Maybe.
hey, let's get back to it. We're at the end of the show. Larry, you're going to have to close this out real quick. But I'll tell you what, we'll always be back here when it's not holidays and on this same time. Larry, go for it. Catchphrase.
It looks like Larry lost his audio.
Oh, no. Hey, there's no such thing as hell. Don't sweat it. You're going to be all right. Come back next week for Digital Free Thought Radio Hour. See you guys next time.
Thank you for having me. WOZOLP 103.9 FM, Knoxville.